many great questions and ask Catherine, so let me tear through it. Hi, Catherine. Loved it. We have listened to the podcast 3 times. We're talking about Jim Norman's oil card. I wrote to Jim and got a very nice reply from him. I asked him a question about the massive south of the border immigration. He gave me an interesting answer, one I sort of suspected. One of the things, it was a long and very detailed answer. It was very impressive, but one of the things Jim said is, you know, he thinks they're bringing in young, fresh talent to keep the game going, and I agree. I think that's part of the agenda. I love you and Jim because you're interested in the truth, no matter what your opinion may be. You want to know the facts. Not too many do. Thanks again for this great website and for having Mr. Norman on. Very good stuff. We had another wonderful subscriber ask very detailed questions about his price talk, and he posted a very, very detailed response, which I put up on the blog. It's either under subscriber input or under the Jim Norman oil card blog post, but it's quite detailed and long about the price and how the pricing works and where to get the data. And it was a extraordinary effort. Just goes to show you, he really is he's got that deep knowledge that many decades, you know, with boots on the ground and in the business can do. Hi, Catherine. I had the distinct pleasure of hearing about the Breakaway Society when you were on Whitley Strieber's show, Dreamland. What a great show, and thank you for your participation. I think you're one of the most intelligent human beings walking this planet at this time. I love your work and love that you have a good heart. Moving on, I don't know if you've read Benjamin Fulford's writings each Monday, but he's saying some pretty interesting things that I wanted to run by you. I'm fully aware that I may not receive a response from you, but at least I wanted to get this to you in case you had not seen it. You can read Benjamin's column here. And the fourth paragraph from the end of the column, he starts out, let me get back here. He starts out, some bank computers are now free-willed sentient beings operating independently of central bank computers. They think like the Mother Earth and are acting on behalf of the planetary consciousness and genetic entities. I find this interesting, positive, and encouraging for humanity. Maybe we will not make it, survive this mess after all, or is Benjamin rendering disinformation? Oh, maybe we will make it, or is Benjamin rendering disinformation? I can't tell sometimes, but maybe you can. All the best. First of all, I think Fulford is completely without accuracy on many of the things he says. He's certainly entertaining, but I just, you know, I can't relate to pretty much anything he says. The idea that systems that were developed to serve humans have moved outside of human control or acting on their own free will, I think is not true, number one. But number two, if they are acting out of control of the humans that they who created them and for which they're supposed to do certain functions, it's because someone is hacked in and is controlling them. Whether it's Promise software system or, you know, because there have been many decades. If you haven't read Michael Thomas's book, Black Money, and you want to understand how all these systems can be hacked into and manipulated, you know, it's all there. I will say that Elon Musk gave a warning in a speech in MIT. I'm going to talk more about it at the wrap-up. It was up on the blog. I think it's a very important speech, warning about artificial intelligence and the dangers of literally interdimensional forces or energies that don't act in our best interest having an influence on them, that is very dangerous. So I'm a Christian. I believe in angels and demons. And, you know, I've certainly done coast to coast for enough years to get exposed to a lot of the more responsible and irresponsible stuff about paranormal and other kind of energy things. And I think the idea of artificial intelligence and creating systems that can be hijacked by those energies is a real danger. And so, no, I'm not encouraged by this whatsoever. I think it's very, very dangerous. And not that I think what Fulford says is true, but I think Musk's warning is very well taken. I put up an article sometime in the last 2 weeks about scientists announcing that they had proved parallel universe and interdimensionality. And again, I just think there are forces of intelligence and power that operate, you know, outside the material dimension and influence ours. And so we need to be very careful about these things. It's one of the reasons I stay away from things like remote viewing or all sorts of paranormal stuff, because I don't think you begin to understand, you know, what you can invite in when you dabble with that stuff. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, how much of the evolution and degradation in the quality of television programming over the years has to do with the powers that be wanting to control what our minds are focused on? In one sense, 100%, because if we as a society had really wanted to use television in very positive and powerful ways, it would be quite extraordinary what we would be doing with it. At the same time, we also see new technology shifting flow out of the TV channel and into the internet, computer, smartphone, tablet, you know, the internet of all things channel. And part of what you're watching is a spiral down as everybody tries to turn up their shriek-o-meter and do more extreme and shocking and dramatic and entertaining things to try and attract as they're sort of losing their market share. So a lot of the shriek-o-meter we're seeing both on TV and in the print media and in a variety of different sort of forms is as everything sucks into that smartphone and the mobile system, you see more and more people traditionally having difficulty, attracting the audience as everything sort of organizes and shrinks into that little phone. So another question, could you see any reason why the powers that be might want to crash the value of the U.S. dollar? No, I think they want to swing the pendulum back and forth and back and forth and back and forth as part of building out a global currency. And will the U.S. dollar evolve into the global currency, or will something else come up and take it? You know, I think that's a ways down the road. They just need to keep swinging the pendulum back and forth and have lots of fairy tales and lots of competition to kind of make that system go and get built out with redundancy. Hi, Catherine. I met with you in Albuquerque and so enjoyed our time together. Thanks for doing this call today. I have the following question. I'm on the board of a not-for-profit that produces documentaries. The founder is planning to raise funds on Kickstarter for the nonprofit's current film. It's my understanding that the Kickstarter distributes funds raised to the creator of the project, in this case, the founder of the not-for-profit, the funds being donated to the not-for-profit. Can the funds being donated to the not-for-profit and avoid personal tax, or will the funds be taxed as ordinary income before a donation can be made? It is my understanding that Indiegogo does allow projects to be created by a nonprofit entity, thus avoiding all IRS problems, but they do not have the tracking software or visibility of Kickstarter. We discussed this on our interview with Patty, and I would encourage you to listen to it. It was very good. There's no clear direction. Something can only be deductible if it is given directly to the not-for-profit. So it sounds like if you want to preserve the tax, it's going to go through. It would have to go through Indiegogo. My take on these things, in many cases, is it's either a gift or it's partially a gift and partially a payment for a good or service. So that would be my sort of approach if I was doing this. But it's clearly the IRS has not made it clear. And so we could literally see things that we thought were gifting to an individual, you know, within the $14,000 annual gifting allowance, the IRS say, no, that's ordinary income. So this is a pretty fluid area, and there's a lot to be debated out. So it seems to me if you you might consider doing two campaigns, one on Kickstarter for the individual and one on Indiegogo that goes straight into the not-for-profit. Another question, I just got word from my sister that her 6-year-old boy was suspended from school for drawing a gun and pretending to shoot it. I'm not sure all the details yet, but was wondering if they wanted to pursue the legality of this, where you might find a civil right lawyer that deals with these types of issues. I don't know. What I will say is if it was a real gun, as opposed to a toy gun, and a 6-year-old pulled out the real gun and pretended to shoot it, then that 6-year-old boy should definitely be suspended. So if anything, I'd like to help a lawyer to help the school. I can't imagine why you'd want to pursue the legality of this. It sounds to me like the school is well within its rights. There are many local currency and network currency and barter systems that could work and add tremendous value to the economy. Oh, sorry. The question is, wonderful subscriber posted lots of complimentary currency ideas from a wonderful woman in Marguerite Kennedy in New Zealand, and another series from someone I don't know. And I basically wrote back, and because I've looked at hundreds of these things, and here's what I said. There are many local currency and network currency and barter systems that could work and add tremendous value to the economy. The reason they don't work is because they're not allowed to work. So the question for all of us is, how are they going to win at economic warfare against the pro-centralization team, or at least exist side by side? Unless you address the enforcement question, none will work. So it takes us back to the control issue every time. What happens to most community currency systems or local currency or complementary currencies is they get sabotaged in a variety of ways. So if you're going to launch one of these things, it's going to be in a hostile environment. And that's one of the reasons I've always been such a supporter of gold and silver coins is you don't have to invent a currency system. You just need to do it. You just do it. You know, you've got the coins, you've got the currencies, you've got a way to trade them. That's one of the reasons Franklin and I created silverandgoldandmoney.com. So anyway, all the currency questions comes down to enforcement. How are you going to protect yourself from the people who want to keep a monopoly? And it's very sad because there are millions of people sitting around doing nothing in the U.S. economy and millions of things that need to be done. And that's if we could have complementary and local currencies, that wouldn't be happening. That would be solved and would create enormous value within the economy. Could you please comment on Martin Armstrong's theories? And do you think that he is in any way considered what you call the breakaway economy, UFO economy? It's tough because I've occasionally read Martin Armstrong, and I have been to one of his conferences. He's got a black box model, and I can't tell you what's in the model. I've never seen him say or do anything that would tell me it was out of alignment with the kind of 2.0, 3.0 framework I have. I don't always disagree with his work. I don't always agree with his work. I often disagree, but I think he's interesting, and he clearly has his own, sort of his own approach. But again, it's a black box, and he really doesn't take you into the black box, so I can't say.